Oh, hang on. I'm gonna set a timer, so that a loud alarm will go off in half an hour.
Is it an air horn? Should be an air.
Sorry.
Is it an air horn? That'll be so cool.
I'll see what's allowed. I've just got my phone here. I'll see if there are options. Oh my gosh, there are. Okay, hang on. Right, 30 minutes. There, it'll be a doorbell.
Cool.
Oh no, wait.
Okay. Have you got options?
We've got so many options, you can't even believe. Okay. I don't know what this will sound like, but I'm going to set it to robots, and then it's done, we're done with it, it's good. Oh, wow. Okay. So there you go. Yeah, I'll set that going then once we start the episode for proper... So, are you guys pretty much ready to begin?
The Webcomics Company Podcast. Visit www.webcomics.co.
Hello and welcome to the Webcomics Company podcast. This week we are going to be talking about character design. I'm Luke Healy of SwaneeNook.com. I'm joined, as always, by Luke Searle of LukeSearle.com.
Hello.
And, oh my gosh, hello. And Zoe Kirk-Robinson of so many things, but you can find all of the links to them at ZoeRobinson.net.
.com.
Dang it! There will be 1 week when I'll get your address right. Yeah, I'm going to write it down right now. Hang on. Oh my gosh. I know this makes for stimulating audio content.
And while he's writing that down, we're missing this week. We're missing James Spence of girlsinspace.co.uk, where you can check out all of his comics.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. You can.
See the way that I can just fill in for that slice blankets.
Good teamwork.
Yay.
Good. Yeah. Woo. So, hey, so this week we're talking about character design, and I suppose where to start on this issue. I mean, character design is really important if you're doing a long-form comic, I think especially, because once you design those characters, you're looking at them for a while.
For a very long time, possibly forever.
It's quite possible. I mean, yeah, so design them well initially. That's the first point. But how do you do that? What's good? What's bad? It's actually interesting you should say, you know, that you've been with them for years, because I worked out recently, just when I suggested this topic, how many times I've drawn my characters. And I was looking, I'm about 30 pages in. In this one page, they appear 14 times. So I'm very many hundreds already I've drawn them. Each, I'd say it's over 100 times each.
I struggle to draw somebody twice. I don't like drawing from another character, so I find that quite an impressive feat. That did you when you started out? Did you make character reference sheets?
The very first time I started, I did not. I just had tons and tons of sketches of them. But for the reboot, I set up character sheets for all of them. One of the things that I found really hard, because, you know, you're redrawing them all the time, and they tend to look different quite a lot, or at least that was my big problem the first time I tried SwaneeNook. So the second time, I made a chart of every character standing beside each other so I could have, like, their relative height. And that was something I found very helpful, just in terms of reproduction. So that was a good thing. But I think I one of the things I actually did okay the first time I did Swan Enoch, because I put a lot of work into the characters and their appearance, which is one of the few things that I did put work into. But I think it's important when you're starting a comic to really pay attention to it, because, you know, as you said, I'm only 30 pages in, and it's over 100 times each, so... you know, you can get tired of drawing a design, and if it's a really, really bad or really, really complex design, you're gonna want to stop drawing it.
Yeah, it becomes a life sentence in a way, doesn't it? So, and now for the next 24 years, you're going to be drawing the adventures of really complex spiky armored man. I think in episode 5, he may lose his really complex spiky armor. And spend the rest of the series trying to get it back and never succeed.
Yeah, so I think definitely spiky armor is one thing definitely to avoid. I think armor in general, unless you're really good at drawing it, maybe just don't put armor in your character.
Yeah, that's a top tip.
Top tip right there. We need a jingle. Top tip. We're so cool. I'm so cool right now.
It is true, though. If you're going to go for a character, you've got to make them fairly simple, because that way they're more likely to become iconic. I mean, look at Snoopy or Garfield.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, it doesn't have to be, like, super simplified. I mean, those are really simplified examples, but even something like Batman or Hellboy, they've got distinctive shapes that are, you know, they stick in your mind, and they stand out.
Yeah, if you can make a silhouette and people still know what they are, that's a good shape.
That's something I've seen, because you can recognise all of the major Simpsons characters by their silhouettes, and a lot of the Disney, I mean, Mickey Mouse being the quintessential example here, but by a silhouette, if you want to try and make a character which is pretty iconic and is going to stick in people's minds, that seems to be a common belief as to how a good way to judge.
I have heard that before, and I think it's a really, really good tip. And, you know, just because they have simple, recognizable shapes doesn't mean they have to be simple designs. Again, I think Batman's quite a good example. Not that he has too much going on. He's wearing, like, a spandex suit with some boots and gloves. But, you know, Batman's another one who you could definitely recognize by his silhouette. And, yeah, that's a really, really good tip.
Now, Batman, of course, obviously, because Batman's been drawn by lots of writers, he's sort of changed a bit, hasn't he, as well, over the years. He's still kept the same basic design, but thinking about it, he's not as static as something, as perhaps some things could be.
That's a good point. But then again, if you look at the original Garfield has changed a hell of a lot. More than Batman, I would say. The original Garfield is like some big, fat, realistic-looking cat.
Yeah, so, I mean, in the case of Garfield, it was obviously a conscious choice by the creator, you know, when he was drawing it over and over again, that he thought, I really need to refine this design or make it more iconic or some kind of sentiment like that. Whereas maybe with Batman, it's just the fact that he's been passed off to so many artists, and, you know, he's been around so long that he needs to be kind of updated a little bit so he doesn't look really just dated and horrible.
Yeah, very definitely. But now that we're talking about not being afraid to change the character, should we talk about what actually makes you think, like, this is the right character? Because I think character design, it all comes down to what it's, the character's going to be suited for. Or
I have a fairly mercantile approach to character design, in the sense that every character I create will live for a maximum of 3 panels, probably 1. So I'm specifically creating characters for jokes themselves. So I've got a very definite endpoint going in there.
So how do you decide what the character's going to be like?
Well, visually, it tends to just be sort of, it depends. I sort of have a varying scale between very abstract characters at the far extreme being essentially stickmen, which I've used once or twice, and then I can go to sort of more realistic with the one way of judging it is the sort of the shape of eyes and those go in. So it really depends on the joke, sort of how abstract the joke is, depending on how on how people tend to look. In terms of colour, I always pick skin tone unless it's a specific character, basically on the colour of the background they're standing behind. So I get a nice balance of colours in my comic. So that's my approach to racial equality is what colour background are you standing behind? Let's get some contrast.
I like that. As well, you have to kind of deal in archetypes, I suppose. You know, you need your characters to be recognisable for some jokes, you know, so it needs to obviously be like a businessman or a scientist. Or...
Yeah. So I do sort of play into... archetypes is a nicer word than stereotypes. But, it's definitely... I need to, in my comics, just get an impression for, in the one panel or in the first panel, what they are, what their motivations are. And because I don't have to use them again, I can try and express as much of that through sort of clothes and age and stance as much as possible, just for the joke.
Cool. So I guess, you know, this is a podcast for creators. So if you guys were creating a character from scratch, what do you think is a good starting point? I mean, do you think the character should be written first and then developed visually to match that? Or do you think you should go in and kind of develop them just straight from the ground up in terms of their visual identity as well as their personality? So maybe, you know, one informs the other. I don't know what that question was about. Basically, where do you think you should start when you're making character?
I think I can answer this one because I've done both. With my Knob Mouse characters, the shape came first for the main group and developed the idea of what these people were like as I was drawing them based on what I was seeing on the page. So, you know, I've got Knob Mouse, he's got a big nose and massive eyes, so I thought he's going to be a funny, silly kind of happy-go-lucky main character. And then I've got Frederick, who was basically the big bad guy for most of the original series, and he's a lot smaller, a lot wider, and his eyes are more angled. So they're almost like two triangles stuck together. I thought, he looks more manic and a bit sillier, so he'll be the bad guy. And that's how that entire series came about. But when I've been doing Inkproof Canon, I've been designing the storyline first. So with one of the characters that I'm doing at the moment is Dave Weatherby and the Devil's Accountants. And I had the idea of Dave Weatherby was this guy who's been set upon all his life. He's really good at his job, but he's an accountant and he's always overlooked for promotion. So I decided that he's going to have to look like the kind of guy who's been trod on by everyone else all the way through his life. So he's a small guy, he's bald, he's got a few worry lines on his forehead and a really big moustache, just basically to hide most of his face so that people can't see that he's forever unhappy and sulking. So it can work either way, but I think, if I'm honest, knowing more about the character first by designing them and then drawing them makes for a better look on the character.
I'd concur with that. You can do so much. The visual element can communicate so much instantly about a character.
Yes.
It's not in a writing process I'm actually greatly familiar with, but I would have thought you'd have to make big decisions about your character. If you're going to do the drawing first, you'd be making big decisions about their backstory, about their personality, from just what happens to come out of your pen, which you may take that to be how your muse communicates through you, just through the flow of my pen is, and then this is how the magic happens. But in a more standard sense, I would have thought that it would be a lot easier to write first than draw.
I think you're right, and it's true what you say. You are going to limit yourself by what the character looks like in the end. and if you know a lot about the character, then you can hint an awful lot about their past by how they look, rather than having to say it all straight away. But if you've already got the look of the character and you've decided that actually he looks a lot like Doctor Doom, he's got a big mask on, then you have to explain at some point why he's wearing the mask, surely. And things like that. So you're setting everything up already if you've already decided what he looks like.
Do you have a question for the team? If so, pose it at www.webcomics.co.
Webcomics Company Podcast.
Again, with Knob Mouse, none of the characters have hands or arms. They've got big glove-like things, so I'm limited in what I can do with them, because I can't have them reaching for something, otherwise his arms come off.
that would be like a practical everyday problem, I imagine.
Yeah,
it makes certain things difficult.
And it's a problem that I have had. At certain points, you'll see that certain characters' hands don't seem to be attached to anything, and that's because I just can't work out a way of having them do something that's required by the plot, but would actually be limited by the fact that they have no arms. So
that's actually a really interesting point to bring up when we're talking about character design. Just, you know, you're saying obviously they don't have arms, but proximity to realistic humans is something that when you're working out the art style for your comic, and I suppose you know, as an extension of that, designing the characters, it's something you really need to think about.
Yeah, definitely.
It changes what you can do with them, if you know what I mean.
Definitely. I mean, you wouldn't do certain things in South Park that you would do in The Simpsons, because of the way that South Park is limited by its limited animation. I'm trying to think of an example, but none's coming to mind.
Well, I think that maybe... I could use my own comic as an example if it's not too self-serving.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, in Swanee Nook, I mean, the characters are fairly, you know, they're extremely stylized. They're nowhere near like a realistic depiction of a human. You know, proportionally, they just aren't. So a problem that I've kind of run into that I didn't consider when I was designing them is the size of their hands compared to the size of their heads. So they've got large heads in my comic, which is kind of like a staple of cartoon drawings, especially of kids and kind of cutesier stuff. But anytime their hands are interacting with their heads, it is an issue to draw without making it look freakish. So I think maybe it's something that I should have thought more about during the design phase, because especially with my example, the hands and the heads, your hands interact with your head and your face a lot when you're emoting.
Yes.
So they always look a bit weird. The upcoming page, the page that I'm posting tonight, is probably a good example in it, because one of my characters is messing with her hair. She's taking out like a bobbin from her hair, and it just looks like if she, like, her eyes are bigger than her hands. So that's, yeah, I think I should have thought about it. So I think when you're designing your characters, an important thing to do is don't just draw them standing still up against, you know, like a police lineup style background. Have them doing things.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have thought of that, but now you've mentioned it is an incredibly important thing. I'm just trying to think, is there anyone else that does that? I suppose Frank Miller, if you've seen recent Frank Miller work, his characters are big, stocky, and have enormous hands. So if he's going to do anything like that, then the hands are going to be able to pick up the entire head and crush it. And
yeah.
It's going to look weird.
Yeah, could you imagine those, you know, like, I haven't read it, but just from what you've said there, can you imagine those big giant hands putting on mascara or something onto the face? or trying to pick the nose?
I can now.
Oh, dear.
And I've got two detectives standing over the corpse. So what's going on here, John? Well, it looks like she's decapitated herself trying to put on makeup. Another one? That's the third this week.
Curse you, Frank Miller, and your easily killed characters.
Have you guys read all the way through Gellicrae Court?
Yes.
If you compare how, well, really everybody looks in the first season, the first chapters, as to how they look now, there's quite a significant difference. You can do a similar thing if you look back at Peanuts, back from the sort of the early 50s. It took Schultz a few years to really hone in on the style that made him famous. But Gellicrae Court's quite good on line one. And I think it's partly because he just got better at drawing. You can see that the actual dimensions of the characters changed considerably. And it could be partly that they've grown up. But I think Annie started off with a much wider face.
She had like an angle on her cheek. It's interesting. Yeah, this, I think in a few webcomics that I've read, another example being Dresden Kodak, I think they tend to, over time, tend towards proportional realism, if that sentence makes any sense.
No,
you know, they become more like realistic people, the way they're proportioned, because it looks right. You know what I mean? It's hard to make some things, especially stuff like action poses. Like, I don't want to call out any comics in particular, but since Gellicrae Court is already up, if you look at just the first picture of Annie, it's hard to imagine her, you know, like, having dueling in a sword fight or something, you know what I mean? Where there's a lot of action, a lot of movement. It just wouldn't look as correct as a more proportionally realistic character.
Yeah, and then I'd go for the opposite. For example, with Judge Dredd from 2080, if you look at the original designs for him, he's quite different to what we have now. And actually going back to that with the new film that's going to be coming out, the original Judge Dredd has a small eagle patch almost on his shoulder, and then biker-style padding on his other shoulder. And he's muscular, but he's got a kind of swimmer's build. And as it's gone on through the years, I think it's about 35 years old now, you see the Judge Dredd now, and he's got this very, very square jaw that no one could actually have without prosthetics. And the eagle shoulder pad that is the size of his head, and an equally large, huge metal grating on his other shoulder. And it's almost as if they decided, right, the character's going to get larger than life. But he's still got the same proportions of human, but he's a huge muscular guy now, as if he lifts weights when he's not busting criminals. And it's almost as if they decided, right, Judge Dredd has to be a symbol, a bit like Batman is a muscular guy. Dredd's going to be even more muscular, but he's going to have massive shoulder pads that no one could ever wear. And it's weird that the way they've done it. They've almost gone, we don't need realism, we need symbolism.
Yeah, see, that's a good example of stylization that works, because it can. I mean, I'm in no way saying that realistically proportioned characters are better. It's just, you know, I think if you're doing stylized characters, it is harder to make it look, you know, appealing. I can always remember, and I don't remember the name of the comic, so I'm not really calling it out, but on the Webcomic List forum, there was a guy who posted his comic in the Check Out My Comic section, and one of his characters had this chin, and it was like just a circle stuck on the bottom of a triangular-shaped head, and it was so distracting. And it was you know, it was a design that was distracting from the content. So it was, I don't know. That's just, I think stylization can go awry if you don't pay it a lot of attention when you're really going in, which is why designing characters in the first place, I think, is important.
Yeah, you've got to know what you're designing. I know the comic, and it's going to annoy me now trying to remember what it is.
We probably shouldn't call it out. It's been
We probably shouldn't, but even so, it is an interesting idea.
You are listening to the Webcomics Company podcast. Stay tuned for more banter.
While I've got Gullickry Court open in front of me, one thing I've noticed is that in the panel which is up today, which is comic number 848,
yeah,
people listening to this later, you've got Annie returning after a summer spent in the forest. And when I saw the picture, I looked at it and thought, she's changed. And I think it's deliberate, because she's meant to be older and has gone through a certain number of experiences which have been hidden from the reader since the last time they saw her. Your comic is a bit young to have done this, but Zoe, have you ever changed a character deliberately and changed their appearance to match, or aged a character, etc.?
Oddly enough, no, I've never aged a character and changed them. I've sat down and actually redesigned my main characters before several times. Knob Mouse looks completely different to what he originally did, but it's not due to age. It's due to the fact that I looked at him and went, that looks terrible, I'm going to redo it. And I did the same with Emily and Tezrin from All Over the House. If you compare them to what they originally looked like, the hairstyles are different. I've got eyes as well as glasses on Tezrin now and things like that, because I wanted something that looked better to me. But I've never done it to suggest that they've had experiences that we haven't seen or aged them or anything like that. It's just, I looked at them and went, I'm sick of drawing them badly.
And I know some characters in often the mainstream comics, if they turn from good to evil, they'll have a requisite costume change to just highlight the fact that they are now evil Spider-Man or evil.
Yes.
Luke, do you plan to age your characters, or are they going to stay the same age?
I do. Don't want to reveal too much. Okay, so currently, the first page of chapter 2 is up, and the second one's going up tonight because I'm terrible at updating things. But after the end of this chapter, time travel becomes involved.
Yay.
So we will see several versions of the characters throughout their existences.
Oh, nice.
And it's something that I'm very much working on. This isn't really a spoiler. There is a point where they it's kind of a spoiler, but I don't care. There's a point where after events in the comic have been transpiring for a few chapters, they go back and see themselves at the very start entering the shop. And I'm going to make... I don't want to... change the character designs like too radically. I hope they'll evolve over time as I become better at drawing them. But even if you look at the difference between chapter 1 and chapter 2, there's a significant difference in the way their bodies are shaped, especially the girls. They're more shapely, I guess. When they come back and look, I'm going to draw their selves from the start of the comic younger looking than I did at the start, just to highlight that. It's difficult to explain, as frequently time travel plots are.
I think I understand what you're doing. You wanted to make it obvious from the art that the people are older now than they were at the start?
Yes. So as well as having them change the characters that we're following, I'm going to make it so that the characters, the younger ones, look younger than they originally did when I was drawing them at the start. To further emphasize.
That's cool.
Yeah, thanks. We're kind of coming. We have about 5 minutes left for this. So I just wanted to briefly talk about clothing, if you guys don't mind.
Yeah.
I'm vaguely familiar with the concept of it.
It's an important part of character design. And as we said at the start, you're going to be drawing these clothes a lot. So make sure they're drawable repeatedly, because you don't want to get 10 pages in and then be like, oh my gosh, this dress has this pattern on it that I can't keep drawing. So I'm going to recommend against patterns unless you're willing to put in the time there. clothing can tell a lot about a character's personality, and there's a really, really good blog post on the guy who does Dresden Kodak's Tumblr about clothing that I suggest everyone will read, and I'll send you the link for that, Zoe, after this.
Cool.
But yeah, I mean, clothing is really important. I'm just going to use my own comic for an example again really quickly. So I have the three main characters, and when I was considering what they were going to be wearing clothing-wise, I wanted to kind of have each of them have a distinctive color so that from a distance it would be obvious which one was which. So I guess I'm including hair in this as well. So each of them have a different hair color, and each of them have a different dominant color in their clothing. So for Amy, it's purple. For Ellie, it's green. And for John, it's blue. Even though Amy's hair is red, everything about her, just look at her hair all the time. So I'm going to have to change that. Just the hair, oh my god. Don't design your characters with bright red hair. That's a tip.
I think that came up last couple of weeks ago when we discussed colour.
I
was going to say there are exceptions to that, but then I thought actually the exception I'm thinking of is black hair with red tips, so it's not an exception at all. I think you're right, don't do it.
Don't do it, kids. It's only danger and headaches when you're trying to make compositions with red hair. Yeah, so no, I won't go on about that because I already spoke at length, I believe, last time about it. But basically, their clothes, I hope, tell that they have different attitudes. So Ellie is in kind of, she's just come from gymnastics, so she's dressed in kind of exercise clothes that are very loose and easy to move in. Amy's wearing like purple with a bit of frilliness going on, so that's, and she's wearing boots, which, you know, I hope tells a little bit more about her character. She's a bit more girly. And then John has the big glasses. So he's supposed to just look like a bit of a nerd, a bit of a loser, and kind of like his mother bought him those clothes. And I realize that it all doesn't come across obviously, but I hope at a subconscious level it is imparting something anyway.
No, I think you are getting that across. I think there's definitely. I think with John, yeah, I get an impression certainly.
Cool.
Somewhat sheepishly and parentally dressed.
Oh my gosh, you guys, we have 10 seconds left before the robot comes on. Any closing words?
No.
Have fun.
2, 1.
Shall we sign off then?
Yeah, does anyone just have anything to say to wrap it up? And then, or like I can wrap it up, but do you guys have any kind of closing statements?
I have one. Regardless of what we've all just said, at the end of the day, you've got to have fun and enjoy the design that you make. You've got to enjoy drawing your character, or you're going to hate drawing the comic.
Yeah. Get to know your character, love your character, be friends, be nice to each other.
Take them out
and
to dinner.
Have a long and happy comic together.
Hooray!
Yay! I think, yeah, that's a point we don't put across maybe enough in the podcast for giving advice. Have fun! Enjoy it! Whoops.
What was that sound? Never mind.
So, yeah, do you guys want to sign off, then?
Okay. I've been Luke Sell of LukeSell.com.
I've been Zoe Kirk Robinson of ZoeRobinson.com.
I'm Luke Healy of SwaneeNook.com, and this week we were missing our usual contributor, James Spence of GirlsInSpace.co.uk. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Webcomics Company podcast. See you in 2 weeks' time.
I'm recording now.
We hadn't started the episode yet anyway, so nothing too valuable lost other than our charming banter.